You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Bouray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Bouray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Hi there.
Gary, I was perusing your fantastic and successful headshot book.
You were perusing it.
I was perusing
the book.
You weren't
reading it.
I was looking through, I was skimming,
and I
was looking at all the headshots. There's a lot of headshots in the book.
So many headshots.
How many headshots would you say are in the book?
Probably 180.
180 headshots. And what I noticed was there wasn't a headshot of your podcast partner, Bouray Perry, in the book. And I think we should maybe take a moment to discuss how it is you published a book with 180 pictures of people's heads in it, and you didn't put my picture in your book.
I only have one of you that we did in Vegas.
That's true.
And I've never...
See, that's even worse. You actually have one. The defense would be, I've never shot your headshot. But you actually have shot my headshot.
It was okay. It was pretty good. But, I mean, I didn't discuss that technique in the book.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't have any reason to go on.
Yeah. I did 180 headshots, and you just didn't discuss
maybe
the technique?
In the next book, we'll shoot a special shoot just for you, and I'll put you on the cover.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm actually...
That was my next question.
Yeah.
How did you pick the cover photo?
Oh.
I thought it was an interesting choice because not traditionally what you would think of as a headshot.
Right.
I mean, the guy's wearing the big parka.
Well, he's an artist. He's a musician.
Okay.
And it was a photo shoot. He actually, funny enough, when we first started probably in the headshot business specifically, like 2009, 2010. And we did that one in the studio, and he... won a headshot session in a raffle. We had given a small headshot session as a prize at an acting class, and so they basically like just gave it out randomly. It was at an acting seminar, and he won.
All right.
And because he's an actor and a musician, and so he was actually a free session.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it was just like photos for his acting headshots, and also we shot a couple that would be used later on for like his album cover. So.
But your choice of that image,
it's one of my favorites.
I mean, it's a great, a very dynamic image.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
But I also think it further illustrates that this is not your average headshot book.
Right.
But I thought it was a very dynamic image to use.
It's funny. So much of what I teach is the corporate stuff generally.
Right.
And, the process with Amherst of picking the cover is like they have a marketing team and they're thinking, I don't care what the headshot looks like to the photographer. I want this headshot to be attractive to the potential buyer of the book.
Right.
So they, of course, the numbers, and this is, I'm sorry, I'm not anti-feminist or anything like that, but the numbers don't lie. If you have a beautiful woman on the cover of your book, it sells more.
Okay.
And with both men and women.
Okay.
And that's just the way, and they really wanted a picture of a woman. They said, I think it was something to the effect of like, yeah, dudes don't sell as well.
But you bucked them on that?
Yeah, I did.
And said, this is the one I want.
Well, you
stood up for your rights.
It was a collaborative process. I gave them... You know, we narrowed it down and back and forth, and the title of the book, the cover of the book, we worked with the marketing team at Amherst, and they, you know, giving input back and forth because they have a lot of things to consider. The thing about SEO, is it searchable, and all this other stuff. And so, you know, we narrowed it down, and I said, okay, here are 10 images out of the book that I would be happy with if one of these was the cover.
Right.
And they actually picked that one out of the 10.
Okay, so this is, you know, off topic, but it made me think. I think I may have shared this with you. Did I tell you about the actor who no one doesn't like? I tell you the story about the actor who no one doesn't like.
No.
This is a famous actor who was called in to do a movie role.
Mm-hmm.
He hadn't really had a big role in a while. They called in to do a movie role, and they said that this character is a guy that's kind of gruff, and it would be easy to not like him. And we want you for this role because we feel that that people will like you, even though your character is not necessarily likable.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, why do you feel that way? And they said, we actually did a lot of research. We did a lot of polling data and that sort of stuff, asking people about actors who you like, who do you don't not like. And there was only one actor who came up with a zero in the don't like category. There was not a single person who we polled.
Do you want me to guess who it is?
Who said they don't like this person.
Mm-hmm.
You want to take a shot at who it was? I'll give you a little bit of a hint.
Mm-hmm.
And he's mainstream, certainly. Big star, certainly, but not Arnold Schwarzenegger type big star. He's been around for a long time, been making movies for a long time, been in a lot of movies, headlined a bunch of movies, but not necessarily the name that pops right off when you think of a
because I would think Tom Hanks star. Right off the bat.
Well, no, it wasn't Tom Hanks
because everybody likes Tom Hanks.
But then again, this is a role. He wasn't the main character in the movie. This is a role you would never go to Tom Hanks for.
Okay, all right. Let's see. We're going to go to A-list actor, though.
I guess. That's the thing about him. He's headlined a bunch of movies, but you don't think of him necessarily as a guy that opens a movie.
Okay.
But he has, yeah.
Okay, so everyone likes Steve Buscemi.
No, not Steve Buscemi.
Everyone really likes that blonde kid from the Harry Potter movies. Everybody loves that kid.
No, it's not him. No.
Everybody loves...
It's not that they love him. It's just that there's no one who hates him.
Oh, so somebody's sort of like inoffensive.
Yeah.
Like
Milquetoast. It's just that for some reason, everybody's like, that guy? Oh, yeah, he's all right. There's just no one who's like, oh, I don't like that guy.
Tom Arnold.
No, God. People hate him like crazy.
Dennis Quaid.
No, but I like that's a good call.
Yeah,
because Dennis Quaid.
Even when he makes bad movies, yeah. I still like him.
Dennis Quaid's a good call, and this guy is kind of like a Dennis Quaid older though.
Older than Dennis Quaid, I would say Ian McKellen.
Not that old.
Okay,
you'll never get it.
I'll never get it.
Are you ready?
Okay,
Kurt Russell.
Yeah, he's going to be in the new Guardians of the Galaxy.
Kurt Russell was the only guy that tested zero in the don't like category. There was no one they asked. There was no one they asked who said. And the movie I'm talking about was what was the movie? Stargate.
Stargate. Yeah.
And it was an interview, and he said, if you look at my career, he's actually has played a lot of characters that were kind of, you know, hardcore, like, you know, that would be easy if you'd be like, I just don't like that guy. But you're okay with it because it's Kurt Russell.
He's got that likable face. Tombstone.
Look at Tombstone. Phenomenal. In Tombstone, he was not necessarily a nice guy.
No, he was very,
but everybody loved him in Tombstone.
He's very severe.
Yeah.
You know? There was
that movie where they had to storm the president's plane or whatever. He was in that. And he plays a lot of soldier types. Now, in Guardians of the Galaxy, he's going to play that kind of guy.
I think he's going to play Chris Pratt's dad, I think is like.
So here's the other cool thing about Kurt Russell that I learned.
Yeah.
Walt Disney, when he died, on his desk, on his piece of note paper on his desk, he had written the name Kurt Russell. To this day, that no one knows why. It's not, he didn't die at his desk. It's just that the last thing that Walt Disney ever wrote down was Kurt Russell on a piece of paper on his desk.
Maybe Kurt Russell murdered him.
I don't know.
Kurt Russell was the voice of the fox and the Fox and the Hound. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he did a bunch of Disney movies. He's a big Disney star when he was like 15, 16 years old.
When he was a little kid, he was in the Fox and the Hound. He was one of the voice actors that did it, which was made when Walt Disney was still alive.
Yeah, he did the computer who wore tennis shoes and all this stuff. He was a big Disney kid actor when he was like 14, 15 years old.
Here's a trivia question. Best Kurt Russell movie?
Well, everyone's going to say, I've got to say Tombstone.
No, you're incorrect.
Okay, this is by your...
No, this is indisputably the best Kurt Russell movie ever made.
Well, then it's got to be Big Trouble in Little China.
Of course it is Big Trouble in Little China. Yeah, of course it is. What's the matter with you?
Big Trouble in Little China.
How did it take you that long to come up with that movie?
Big Trouble in Little China. But The Thing, awesome movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And Snake Plissken.
Escape from L.A.
Escape from New York.
Both terrible movies.
And when you think about Escape from New York, which was very successful... There's a good point there. He said when they gave him that movie, he said, okay, but here's the deal. I don't want any backstory attached to my character to make him likable. Normally, you know, you got a bad guy. He was a bad guy. He was a criminal sent in to get the president. But there's some backstory that his wife was murdered or whatever, and that's why he ended up being bad. He was like, I don't want any of that. And if you think about the movie, Snake Plissken is just a bad dude sent in to get the president, and at no point are you given any reason to like him.
Except that he blows stuff up really well.
Yeah, but you're never given a reason to like, there's no redeeming feature to him whatsoever. And that's why Kurt Russell played him, because people like Kurt Russell, even when you have no reason to like him.
Welcome to the Kurt Russell fan cast with Boudre and Carrie.
Well, this is great, because I never thought about it before. But then when I thought about it, I was like, yeah, Kurt Russell, he plays a lot of guys who are kind of, you know, but you're okay with that, because for some reason, you just like Kurt Russell.
Everybody likes Kurt Russell.
And by the way, the picture that they did of him on the cover of GQ was fabulous.
Yeah.
They had a great picture of him for the cover of GQ.
I really do like GQ. Is one of the magazines where their covers are kind of formulaic, but you know, I always really like them.
Well, listen, I posted something on the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/photobombpodcast, and it would have been a couple weeks ago, but go look it up. It's pretty cool. It was an article about a guy who had built a play set in his backyard and invited all the kids in the neighborhood to come play anytime they wanted. And basically the article was about how kids don't get out and they're not independent enough. They don't risk themselves.
I saw that article, yeah.
So but it's not about the article. Whether or not you agree with that, who cares? What's interesting is if you go look at the article, whoever shot the pictures, extensive with the off-camera light that you normally don't see in an article. Like, here's the whole family around a picnic table, and they used a big off-camera light to camera left that's off-camera that's lighting it. I mean, very, very much contrasty, very much providing depth to the pictures. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, wow, this looks like they hired me to go shoot, you know, the pictures for this, because the first thing I would do is pull out that off-camera light.
Sure.
So if you go to the Facebook page and look that up, you'll see some interesting what would be, I would say, out of the norm for news.
I did
type,
read the article.
Yeah,
it was a good
news
read.
Type pictures in an article.
Speaking of off-camera flash versus available light, I shot a wedding a couple weeks ago. And it was my first wedding in a while. In right. fact, I think we only have two or three more weddings booked, and we don't have any more.
That's it?
That. Like, we're almost completely transitioned over to doing corporate stuff and headshots and commercial work. But I shot this wedding, and it was a beautiful wedding in a beautiful place. And it was the first time in 10 years that I've shot a wedding, and I didn't pull out any lighting.
The whole time?
I shot the whole thing, like, with what was around. There's even one shot of the groom I did that I lit with, like, a table lamp.
Okay.
In the getting ready room, instead of like busting out a flash, you know, I don't know what it was. The light was good. The place was good. The couple, it was all just kind of everything.
It worked out.
I haven't shot a wedding without using lights,
right?
Ever that I can think of. Like, and it was just, I just went with it, and I shot almost the whole wedding with 16-35 on camera.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the movie The Revenant was shot completely with natural light.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, that is a one. It's still, I have it like. Downloaded, and I just haven't.
I haven't watched it.
It's on. I think it's on. If you have an HBO subscription, I think you
it
can
is.
Watch on HBO.
Yeah,
right.
I got it on the DVR, but I just haven't, because I got a feeling it's going to be kind of intense.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, yeah, cocktail, sitting on the couch. I don't want intense.
Yeah. It's like, I just want to watch Friends for the fourth time. You know?
Pivot. Pivot. Yes, just want to watch Friends.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
okay.
So, hey, there's some big news going on in the world right now, and this will be interesting. Like. All these websites are down.
That was 2 weeks ago.
Reddit, Netflix, all this stuff goes down, and some kind of crazy, like, brutal domain attack. It's called a DDoS attack on DIN, which is a website. What's it called? It's domain and routes internet traffic. And so, like, people are posting on Twitter, and they're posting on Facebook, like, that Twitter's not working. They're posting on posting that Netflix isn't working, and all these big websites are just going down.
Wow,
is that terrifying?
Yeah. Well, it depends on what's. I mean, losing Netflix and Twitter.
Yeah,
not so much terrifying.
That's the point. Is that
is the porn going down? Because that would be terrifying.
If we lost, please, just not the
please
porn.
God, not the porn.
Oh my, Pornhub is still up. So
because they never attack the porn.
Yeah. No. We're not animals.
Yeah.
Okay. We're hackers. We're not monsters.
We're not monsters.
Who would do that?
Honor among thieves.
God, I mean, that's the point of the internet, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
You ever see that musical Avenue Q?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I saw it live.
Yeah,
the
internet is for porn. It's such a great number. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, so not pornography. Welcome to the Photobomb Podcast. What do you got for us today?
Well, let's go with a question from Sarah Booker, who wrote in to say, what are the unique challenges facing a photographer in each style of popular photography? What style is the hardest to make a living at now? And what style is the easiest? So I thought we would take each style, each type, you know, kids, weddings, family portraits, seniors, and I thought we would take each one and we would talk a little bit about each one and how it's changed over the way it used to be and where we think it fits in the scale a little bit of how hard it is to make a living. So if you're new to photography, you're listening to the podcast and you haven't really figured out what you want your niche to be, maybe we can give you a little of a bit of our experience.
I was having a great conversation with a guest in our Orlando PPA affiliate the other night, and he just moved to the area a little while ago from another state, and he was saying, like, he's just trying to figure out what he wants to get into. And he's got some real negative influences around him that are like, oh, it's so hard and right. You can't make it. And I'm sitting there like, I know photographers that are absolutely killing it, you know.
Sure.
And, you know, you just kind of got to find your way. So this is actually be a good
all
topic.
Right. So let's do it in chronological order. Okay. So we will start with maternity.
Maternity.
And then we'll move up the chain from there.
Okay.
So maternity, I will say that I think that the big change in maternity is that it used not to exist.
Yeah.
That if you look back 20 years ago, when it was film and studio, I never knew of anyone when I was a kid who they went to get maternity pictures at all.
No.
So that's one of the rare, I think, categories we're going to come across here. Another one maybe being seniors that didn't really exist. So, I mean, how hard is it to make money at it? That's another question.
Well, the good news and the bad news is if you look on a global scale in the United States, like, the birth rates are kind of declining. for educated people. Like, I've seen those articles all over the place.
Yeah.
So, like, it's talking about a market that's shrinking. Millennials are waiting longer to have kids, and they're having less kids.
Like Idiocracy, the movie Idiocracy, which is about the fact that the dumb people have a bunch of kids, and the smart people have few kids, and eventually the dumb people take over.
Right, they'll outbreed us. The thing is about
I like that you said outbreed us.
Outbreed us. Outbreed them.
Just assuming that you and I are.
Well, yeah, that's true. I might be one of the dumb. Dum-dums.
That's right.
That's true. I totally forgot to allow for the fact that I might also be stupid.
You may be
No, but the sociologists have known for decades that, how many children people have is determined by income. So the less money people have, the more kids they typically have. So, like, if you think about people that nobody you know, with some exception, maybe like, you know, Mitt Romney, but nobody you know who is educated, who is working really hard to work, most of those people do not have 4, 5, and 6 kids.
Right.
They'll have 1 or 2, maybe 3. So, and I think that, I mean, it's almost across the board. You can see that there's a real big trend. So, like, if educated people are having less kids, then let's assume that these are the people with the most income, and millennials are waiting longer and having less children, then maternity photography is technically going to be a shrinking market.
I think the thing with maternity photography is that while it didn't really exist years ago that much, and it does now, I think that as a maternity photographer, it's got to be tough to really monetize it, because I get calls all the time from clients, wedding clients, who then come back, oh, we're pregnant, you know, we want to do a maternity session. And then I say, great, here's the pricing. I think they get in their mind, they're like, what I really want is a great maternity, cool maternity picture that I can maybe put online, but otherwise, I really can't think of what to do with it. I don't want it on my wall. I don't necessarily want an album. And so what product do you sell them?
Oh, I think that I know lots of photographers that do great maternity and that are crushing it. You know, like
really,
but at the same time, you really got to like it. And I think that it's almost like, I don't know a lot of male photographers that are.
Yeah, I think that's a big drawback.
You know, and I've done maternity before, and it's not really my thing. And right. And so, you know, you got like Alicia D'Amico, who we've had on the show, and she, you know, she does a lot of maternity. Megan Harper, who's been on the show, does a lot. Julie Kelleher, who's going to be a guest coming up on the show soon.
Wonder if someone like Megan, if for her, that maternity isn't for her what engagement sessions are for the typical wedding photographer. In that,
like, it's just a run up to the big
thing. It's a run up to the big thing,
the baby,
which is the baby.
Right. Yeah. No, I can't say that it's not. I know that plenty of photographers have made great successes out of doing series over time.
Right.
Like, they photograph maternity and then they do the newborns.
You buy a package.
Yeah. You know, you do like the first year or something. And we've even done it at our studio, but we don't really do it much anymore. Like, I refer. There's a photographer in our town that specializes in maternity and in babies, and I send him, and I love her. So I send people to her when I get those inquiries. And there's somebody listening going, are you crazy? You know, people spend so much money on their babies, but the amount of time and effort that goes into it, I would rather book a corporate gig and, you know, than I would to do something like that. And so that's just kind of the way I built my business. I was having this conversation with Megan DePiro, also, who's been on the show. About you don't have to, if you get your business going, you don't have to shoot the things that you don't like after a while. If your business gets some steam under it, you really can specialize more over time. I think one of the things is when you start, you want to do everything and you want to take on every job you can, and because you need to make money, you need to grow your business. But once your business is up and rolling, most photographers I know tend to specialize more over time.
Right.
And I think that maternity photography is great, and I think there is a market for it, but I think that it potentially, you know, just could be going down. But I think people spend a lot of money on that. I know that we even bought the, when Ellie was born at the hospital, they have photographers in the hospitals that come and they do pictures, and we bought everything.
Right.
Like, you know, just because it's like.
But again, that's baby. Which moves us to baby. Now, so let's talk about baby.
Okay.
Again, a market that I don't think really existed that much, not the way it does now. I mean, baby as art is didn't really exist,
Ann Geddes that made
she
that.
She was the one that made that happen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, she pretty much, I mean, when was that, like late 80s, early 90s? And she started to sort of, and so imaginative. I have a big book of Ann Geddes photography, a hardbound book that I bust out every once in a while. And you know what? Like, she was doing it back in the film days and cutting things out and like layering them. And she did a lot of stuff, even pre-Photoshop. She was doing some amazing things. And it just opened up the imaginations of photographers all over the world. And it made made newborn photography and baby photography a thing. Like, you didn't just, you could be creative. You could build a set. And, you know, a friend of the show, Christy Newell, You know, she is famous for building really great sets and doing crazy cool stuff with babies. And, like, you see so much of it. I mean, you could go on 500pix or PhotoBucket or anywhere, and you could just see all the kinds of crazy ideas. And I think that it's because generally newborns are, they just sleep.
Right.
So you kind of have to, I think there's two kinds. There's a really simple, like, kind of Julie Kelleher style, where it's like just fabric on kind of a beanbaggy sort of thing, and they're really simple and sweet and beautiful. And then there's some where they're like putting them in a bag and hanging them on a tree branch or doing the froggy pose and all that stuff. I think that if people are going to spend money on a type of photography, they're going to spend money. I think if anybody who shoots volume knows this, the older kids get, the less money parents want to spend on their pictures for the most part.
Right.
Probably the exception being high school seniors, where they'll typically come and spend more money. But, you know, like when we do the sports, some of the sports stuff we do, like volleyball clubs and things like that, the kids that are under 13, their parents buy everything. The kids that are 16, 17, 18, like, we sell hardly anything to them.
I have that experience with dance pictures.
Right. Because they're like, I've got pictures from every year that they've done this, from the time they were 8 years old.
By the time they're 15 and 16, they're like, we don't need another big package.
There's not enough room on the wall for 12, 11 by 14s of the kid in the same volleyball uniform.
Right. You know? Right. Like, yeah, you're absolutely right, though, because I have kids that are 15 or 16. I've shot for 6 years. And their parents were buying $300 packages 4 years ago, and now their parents aren't buying anything.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, I think that people will spend money, and I think there is a great market for newborn photography. And I think that, by and large, just from a practical standpoint, as a photographer, I think it's one – not that it's easy to do. I think you need less space to do it.
All right, so let's go –
I'm going to complete that thought real quick. Can I finish? No. I think that it's very, very normal in maternity, in newborn photography now, for parents to have, for the photographer to come to your home. And so if you don't have a studio and you don't have room for a studio in your house, newborn photography is a really great business to be in, because you don't necessarily have to have a studio. It's considered very normal and concierge service to go to someone's house to photograph a newborn baby.
Right.
Because a lot of parents don't like to take their kids out when they're new and stuff like that. So if you are starting in photography, you see a lot of people doing babies, practically speaking, you don't have to have a workspace to do it. You just shoot them in their homes.
So versus 10 years ago, easier to make money as a maternity photographer or harder?
Newborn, you mean?
Maternity.
I would say it's probably easier now because it's just more accepted.
Okay. And as a baby photographer, easier or harder?
Easier. Because 20 years ago, I mean, if you weren't in a storefront,
I'm saying 10 years ago.
10 years ago. I would say also easier now, because 10 years ago, I think that we had just an explosion of new photographers into the business.
Right.
And I think largely that wave of new photographers has receded.
Okay.
And I think that the market is kind of balancing itself out. So I think that there's less competition overall now.
Okay.
And so I think that it might be easier to make money.
Okay. Next step would be schools.
School volume. I will tell you this, that every photographer that I know that really makes money in photography,
they make it in volume.
Do at least a little bit of volume.
But I will also tell you this, we don't know many of them.
Right. There aren't that many photographers to make good money.
My point is, it's one of those things where I think it's hard to do, be it volume, be it even sports. I think it's harder to really do it and make a good living at it. But the people who do make a really good living.
Right.
And the reason it's hard to do is because of those people who make such a good living at it and are so good at it that they lock everything up.
Well, doing volume properly is a big buy-in. You have to have a lot of equipment.
Right.
You have to have three or four of everything.
Right.
You know, so you're shooting multiple lines, you're shooting hundreds of people, and it's a grind. I mean, if you do sports in schools for probably, you know, in, like when school starts, For 4 to 6 weeks, you're working like 100 hours a week, busting your butt. And then, you know, it slows down. But, I mean, it's brutal, and it's not something that you're really doing in most cases. It's not really artistic feeling as you're doing it. It's commodity
photography. I'm going to say it's harder to do that now, be it sports, dance, any sort of that volume stuff. I'm going to say it's harder to do that now than it used to be.
I think to make
because
that
it used
your
to
only
be,
thing, yeah, because Life Touch has gotten bigger and bigger.
And also, you find that most of the people you know who are making a really good living at it, they're not just taking your standard shot and delivering it.
Right.
They're doing your, you know, Richard Sturdivant stuff. They're doing your, do you want the muscle pack?
Yeah. Do you want a six pack? Yeah.
They're doing that. We're going to take the whole team and we're going to Photoshop them all together. And
it's gotten more competitive. There's almost, with some exception, there's almost a set size to the available market. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like this sports club or this school, like, yes, new schools are being built, but schools are also closing. Like, the overall amount of these available gigs is doesn't fluctuate in greatly over short periods of time. So, like, you have a school that's under contract with a photographer to do the yearbook or a sports team or whatever. Like, they will probably use the same photographer in a lot of cases multiple years. Like, you kind of have to muscle your way in.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like you're just going out there and trying to get families to come to you, you know?
Right.
Because there's the market of portraits is how many people are there on earth.
Well, it's a much harder market to get into in that respect, because it's the only market where you are not dealing directly with the client. You're dealing with someone else.
Yep, there's always a gatekeeper.
There's a gatekeeper, and they want a piece.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, but it's very lucrative. I think it's easy to add it to your business a little bit.
Right.
Like, you can always find a school or a small private school or a preschool or a sports league that will use you.
Right.
It's hard, I think, to sort of grow the business and get enough to make it sort of the center of your business.
And I think digital files are really hurting it.
Right.
I just got a call recently from someone wanting to do the dance pictures. And the person we used last year sold digital files for $30 a pop, and I said, then that's it. You're condemning me to $30 per client.
Yeah, that's it. I need to be able to sell more.
Yeah, you know? they buy a digital file for $30. They're not buying anything else. They're not buying prints. I can't, you know. So that's, you know. Not to mention, what about group pictures? Oh, same thing. Well, one mom buys a group picture and gives it to the other 10 moms.
Right. Exactly. Now, what I would say about volume photography is that the reason that it can be so lucrative is because it is scalable. It is a type of business that you can set up that it doesn't matter who's taking the pictures necessarily.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can add.
You can retire and still have your business running.
Like, you could not be shooting in it and be making money.
Right.
And so that's sort of the difference. And so it is a really good business to get into. I think to really build it, it does take time to build a successful one, because it's a lot of customer service and it's a huge burden. You have parents wanting to ordering the wrong things or not knowing how to use the website. So you're creating for yourself a lot of customer service interactions that you don't have to have in a smaller, lower volume boutique business, but it can be very profitable. And I think it can be just as profitable as it's always been if you sell correctly. But at the same time, now digital does offer some unique challenges to volume photography.
All right. High school seniors.
Depends on where you live. I mean, senior photography has been around for a long time. You know, I wasn't necessarily alive in the 60s. But
I think the biggest struggle.
Did you have high school senior pictures done?
But only by the company that shot the school pictures.
Right, but did you stand next to like the letters of the year you graduated?
No. I'm older than that. In mine, it's me and sitting in front of the blue background and. I'm really interested in something that's slightly off camera.
Oh, I would love
to see
that.
Yeah,
did they double expose another?
No.
Of your head next
Although
to
that was very popular at that time.
Wow, that would have been amazing.
But no, it's me looking off to the left.
Hey, can
at
we?
Something.
Do you have so access to that picture?
I took a picture of it with my mother's house. I took a picture of my phone.
Can we? Can we post it on the page? Let's post on the Facebook page
with my feathered bangs. Feathered bangs and a knit tie.
I am dying to see this.
A knit tie.
Okay, so
and acne like you wouldn't believe. After they cleaned me up, I'm still covered in acne.
Oh my gosh!
But anyway.
I think that senior photography, in my opinion, is at least we're in Florida, right? So every state's a little bit different. Some states are contract, some states are not contract, and it basically means that your market is easier to penetrate or not easy or harder to penetrate because they have to go to a certain photographer to get their picture in the yearbook.
Right.
And so most people, if you're in a contract state and you're not the contract photographer, it means if they come to you, it means they've already had their pictures done once and they have to want to do it so bad that they'll do it again.
Right.
So that can be a barrier for entry. However, you know, I think that seniors are often like a unicorn. You know, I see some photographers really successful at it, like, you know, Clark Sanders is a friend of ours and Rod Evans. And I see, you know, some people really crushing it, you know, Melanie Anderson with high school seniors. But I don't know anybody in my area who kills it unless they're doing the school.
Right. Florida, because of what you said. I mean, they tried to get legislation passed years ago to stop that, to say you could go to anyone and any photographer could do your pictures as long as they provided a picture to the yearbook that met the certain criteria that they asked, you know, then anyone could do your pictures, and it got shot down. So like you said,
well, nowadays would just turn in cell phone pictures.
Well, yeah, people just don't want to be like, okay, I've got to go to two photographers now, I've got to go to the school photographer,
exactly.
And then I've got to go to this guy and spend $1,000. It makes it very tough in that market.
A few years back, we did seniors and we really pushed, and I'm telling you, we did everything you're supposed to do. We had a senior, you know, rep team, and we had like, we did direct mail marketing, we did Facebook ads, and we were pretty successful at it, you know, I think. But even at the year where we were the busiest, I think we photographed like 30 seniors.
Right.
And that isn't a ton, but if your sales average is $3,000, like that's a pretty
that's
good.
That's a huge sales average though.
But
come
it
on.
Depends. Like some people do have that kind of a sales average. I think that we ended up typically at about like $1,200 to $1,500 sales average with our seniors. And we were really just, and that was a pretty decent portion of our business. But I got to tell you, the thing that, that makes senior photography is it is 90% marketing. I mean, you got to love marketing and you got to be all over your marketing.
Right.
You either have to be a school's contract photographer or on their list of acceptable photographers that people have to go to, or you have to be all over it. There's no like Google search engine sort of SEO that's going to make you a profitable senior studio. You have to be actively, aggressively marketing. You got to have a calendar and you got to have dates of things like Colleen and Co, like Darty Hines and those guys. I mean, I was in a workshop once. He's like, and they're a successful studio. And he's just look, and he's showing like, okay, so this, and he also runs SYNC, the Senior Youth National Conference. You know, it's like, okay, and we have this sale on this day, and then they have a whole calendar, and like everything's marked in different colors. And it's like, I don't have that much energy. Like, I don't like shooting seniors that much,
right?
You know,
right.
to put that much energy into it. But I think if you are really business minded and can market like crazy, I think you can be really successful with seniors.
That brings us to weddings.
I think it's the easiest form of photography to start a business as doing. Not the photography itself. Wedding, being good at wedding photography is difficult. But weddings are one area of photography that you know people are going to hire a photographer.
Right.
And that you, or at least most people are going to hire a professional
photographer. I think it's the easiest to break into.
It is because you know where your clients are.
Right.
You got bridal shows and you got wedding magazines and you know exactly where to go to find your clients. And if you could put a little cash down and get in the right places, place the right ads, go to the right networking events, schmooze with the right vendors, go to the right bridal shows and all this other stuff, like you can kickstart a wedding photography business pretty quickly. Like within a few months, you could be in a wedding. If you move to a new town, I think in 5 or 6 months, you could be all over the place.
Right.
And everybody would know your name.
One of the big drawbacks, though, of trying to start a wedding business is that you, unlike other forms, is you can't get your family and friends to come pose for you so that you can get a portfolio together.
Right, you have to actually shoot weddings
yeah,
to get a portfolio.
That's one of the hardest
together.
Things. This is a catch-22 of I can't get weddings without having shot weddings, and I can't
right.
shoot
so
weddings.
Typically, you'll be shooting friends and family's weddings, or you'll right. be shooting like
and
weddings
not like
for free.
And it's not like there's a friends and family wedding every weekend. And many times, they've got their own photographer. And so, yeah, I think that's the biggest barrier to getting into it is getting brides and grooms in front of your camera.
Yeah, I think what you got to do is develop relationships with other photographers. And, you know, the wedding industry can be really competitive for photographers because there are so many photographers and so few weddings. It seems like that sometimes, depending on where you live. But what I know a lot of people that start, you know, you second shoot a lot. You got to be willing to go out of your town.
Yeah.
Like if there's a town like Orlando and Tampa are 2 hours apart, if you're willing to drive to get your portfolio together, go work for a photographer a few towns over that's not necessarily in your market.
Right.
And then get permission to use those photos as part of your portfolio if that's how you're trying to kickstart your business. You know?
I think it's harder to make a living as a wedding photographer now than it was back in the day. Because if you talk to the guys who had Stu, you talk to Kevin Newsom, you talk to those guys.
And they're getting like 10 G's for a wedding.
And they'll tell you that they were getting 60 weddings a year back in the film days, and they didn't advertise or anything. It was
you
just
didn't
people
take
just walked in the
as
door.
Many photos either. You
no,
know?
They just walked in the door. I need a wedding photographer, and there weren't that many photographers. And you know, whereas the markets have changed, the wedding market hasn't changed. Everyone getting married needs a wedding photographer, and it used to be that there were only 1/10 the number of photographers as there are now.
Because weddings is fairly
so everybody got weddings.
Yeah.
You know, now I think it's tougher because there are so many more wedding photographers, and I think it's hard to make a good living at it.
Right,
you can get into it, but to make a good living at it, because you've got to market constantly, and also because there are so many wedding photographers now, if you want to charge a price that's going to give you a good living, you kind of have to be kind of good.
Yeah.
It's harder
to stand out.
You can't half-ass it and hope to make a living as a wedding photographer because the bar is constantly being raised by, you know, cell phones and Pinterest.
I would say that in wedding photography that you can have a very successful business if you approach it as a business, because there are two types of me that really work. It's just like portrait business. You can have a boutique wedding photography business where you're going to shoot fewer weddings for a lot more money. Or there's higher volume, and there's always going to be money in higher volume because most people don't have tons of money, and most people are looking for the best price. And so you can find good clients who have the extra money who are willing to pay $5,000-$6,000 for a wedding photographer, Or you can just go to the common denominator and you can go to people who you know are on a budget. So if you become the, I tell you what, if you're a competent wedding photographer or you put together a team of four or five good shooters, not great, let's say decent, comparable professional level shooters, not doing anything fancy, just straight up and down, looking and smiling at the camera, wedding pictures. If you had three or four photographers that could go in on that and you started a business where you just got them work and you paid them $50 an hour to go shoot a wedding for 5 hours on a Sunday, if you were $1,500 to do weddings, files, and maybe some 4x6s or a tiny album or something like that, and you were around less than $2,000, you'd be booked every weekend. You'd have five weddings a weekend.
But let me say this. It's just funny because I was just thinking along those same lines. Let me say this. I know people who worked for those sorts of organizations, and they never lasted more than a couple of years.
Well, it's at the end of the day, you are producing a quality that is intentionally less good.
Yeah, I knew somebody up north, and one of my assistants went to work for a guy at had a studio in a mall or whatever. And every weekend, she was shooting for this guy, making bupkis money, and he was charging a low amount for the wedding. And I think the problem came down to if you want to do volume. And charge less and do volume and make a living. And I know from what I speak, it only works if you're able to live someplace like I do where you can shoot weddings on Wednesday and Thursday and Tuesday.
Right.
But if you are saying, I'll just do volume, there's only 52 Saturdays in the year.
Right.
So, you're the most volume, you're just not, there aren't a lot of people getting married on Friday.
That's
and Sunday.
What I'm saying. You have to have multiple photographers out at the same
time.
Yeah,
so you've got to be shooting four weddings on Saturday.
Yeah, there's a guy that my dad has shot for, that I've shot for, and there's down in Palm Beach, there are several companies. There's, and down in South Florida where they hire all these photographers who have their own businesses that if they got a Saturday off, he'll pay them $50 an hour to go out for a wedding for 5 hours. Right. And, they'll go and do it if they got nothing else. And then they just hand the images over. There's no editing. Right. There's no BS. It's just like, here are the images. So, I mean, it's pretty good money. But you definitely couldn't do a low-cost wedding business as one person and survive. You won't last forever. You'll have more. No. You'll be stressed out. You'll have a wedding every weekend. But you'll also be editing images all week, every week, with no day off.
Right.
And then you'll turn
and marketing.
Around, yeah, and you'll turn around the end of the day and realize you don't have that much money.
Right. Okay, so bottom line, easier to get into than it used to be, but harder to really make a good living at.
I would say that's accurate. It's harder to make a good living as a wedding photographer than it was, just by sheer number of how many people shoot weddings now.
Okay, which brings us to our final category, which would be family portraits.
Family portraits. No, we got one more category than that, too.
What am I missing?
You're missing headshots and commercial work.
Well, there's headshots and commercial works, which didn't even exist, hardly.
Right. the high-volume headshot business, the way that I do it now, and the way that a lot of people are doing it didn't exist before,
right?
For social media and LinkedIn and email and all that stuff.
Well, so, the idea that everybody at a company needs a headshot didn't exist.
I've shot 300 people because they all work in a call center, and they just need they need an image that is going to be on their internal chat. It pops up, bloop, and they're chatting with other people in the office, or they're doing customer service, like just a little picture.
And they want them all to look nice and uniform instead of it being, here I am drunk at the party. Right. They want everybody's picture to look good.
I shoot for that stuff all the time. And this is like every building down every street that has offices in, all these people need headshots. So I think it is one of the most effective ways to have a profitable business. But again, I think that you got to approach it like it's volume.
Okay.
And the other thing is, it's scalable. Like you could seriously, with you could teach...
It's very scalable. Much easier to teach somebody to do a decent headshot than to shoot a whole wedding.
And I'm not talking about like really, there are photographers out there there's this guy in London and named Nicholas Dawkes, and I don't think anybody knows who this guy is. I follow him on Instagram. He's got like 400 followers. He's like the best headshot photographer I've ever seen in my life. He mostly photographs actors, and he just these phenomenal filmic kind of like they look like they're just in the place.
Ooh,
And anyway, so
I got to break in because I thought about this earlier, then I forgot, and I want to forget it again.
Oh boy,
when we were talking about Kurt Russell.
Yeah,
and I thought, no, when you're talking, no, it has to do with headshots.
Okay, yeah.
Are you familiar with X-ray? IMDb's X-ray. When you're watching a video now,
mm-mm.
Okay, this is the coolest thing. Like I'm watching it. If you're watching a video like on Amazon.com, say on Amazon Prime,
yeah.
There'll be a little button at the top that says IMDb X-ray. If you hit that, dropping down on the side of your screen, every person who appears on screen...
Boo-ray, I brought this up on an episode like 10,
you did?
10 episodes ago.
I just asked you and you said you didn't know what it was.
I don't know what it was called.
Oh, it's called X-ray.
Yeah. Oh, it's the best. Like if you're watching...
Because every person who comes on the screen, there they are. But here's the thing. If you then like click open X-ray, it'll just give you a full screen of every person who was on the show.
Right.
And it's really fun to look at them and be like... Look at the ones who have the professional headshots versus the ones who was a red carpet shot or one. Right. There. And it's really a great let's take a look at a collection of headshots by different photographers, just right. a snapshot, and then look at them and see, okay, this guy do what he do?
Because obviously they're working actors, so yeah. those headshots are working.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting way to just be like, if you just want to go see a bunch of different headshots by a bunch of different photographers, just be watching a video and then click on the X-ray thing.
I love it because we have clients in movies and movie and television very often, and so if you're watching on your phone or iPad, you tap the screen with your finger and it'll bring up the person who's in the scene.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
Their headshot.
I mean, like some guy who's sitting over in a corner and doesn't have a line, it'll bring him up.
Yeah, it's awesome. No, I
don't know how it works, but cool.
So the scalable part of doing corporate headshots on this scale is because they're not looking for like high art. They just want a professional quality right. image of that person's face to use as like an email signature or in a chat bubble or something like that. And so that's not hard to teach how to do that. It's school pictures for grown-ups. And that's right. what I shoot a right. lot. I shoot a lot of stuff like that. And it's very, very profitable. The market is huge, and it's a growing market, and it's new. And I think that and it's not even that difficult to get into it. So I think that that's to, of course I'm a little biased, but I think I know a lot of photographers that it's not necessarily the focus of their business, but almost every photographer I know who's working right now does at least a little bit of it.
All right, final category: family portraits. And I'm going to say that with family portraits, that it is harder to make a living with family portraits than it used to be, because so many people back in the day, if they wanted a family portrait, they had to go to a photographer. And nowadays, because they take so many pictures with right. their phone, they've got so many pictures of their family already, it doesn't occur to them that they need a family portrait. It used to be, when you came over today, mm-hmm. we were looking at a picture that I have of my family when I was like 5 years old. No, the picture of me when I was 5, and that's a good point.
With
I have
the worst haircut
right,
ever.
The worst haircut ever. A picture of me and my family when I was 5 years old. That's the only picture of all four of us together that probably exists from a 5 or 6 year period in my life.
Wow.
So back then, if you wanted a family portrait, you would go down to your local photographer and you would sit down, for their backdrop real quick, and you'd get a family portrait, and that sucker goes on the wall for the next 20 years. But nowadays, I don't think people think about that so much because they got pictures of their family in their phone all the time.
Well, we've heard about the lost generation and all this stuff where people think
I think it's harder to make a living as a family portrait.
You know, PPA is doing a really big push about prints right now and the importance of doing it. And I think that it's true. As far as that they are important, but as far as the business goes, I think, you can easily make a living in or make money or get into family portraits at the price point. And you just got to consider volume and your price point. And if you want to do family portrait sessions for $250 and just give digital files, you're going to be busy.
Oh my God!
But
you're going to be so busy, you're going to kill yourself.
But you got to think if one person with a one person business run out of a home needs to make a living in photography, they need to gross about $100,000. They need to do about $100,000, and that means that a third of that's pretty much gone in taxes, one way or the other. Payroll tax and sales tax and all that stuff. About a third of it should be, your operating cost, and roughly a third of it is going to be what you make.
Right. So you're making $33,000 a year.
Right. So think about that
with $100,000 gross.
That's not 100% accurate.
No, of course not.
But it's pretty close.
Right. But people don't think about that. I'm going to business myself. If I made $100,000 a year, that would be awesome. But you won't make $100,000 a year.
Right. You're going to gross $100,000, and you're going to make about $35,000, $38,000. Yeah. Maybe if you're running your business really efficiently, you might make about $40,000.
Right.
If you're grossing $100,000, that is if you're legitimate and you're paying all your taxes and you're doing all the stuff
you've got your software and you've got your website and you've got your marketing materials and you've got your equipment and you've got your insurance.
But to do how many photos? Shoots, bust out your calculator real quick. How many photo shoots would you have to do? I can actually do this math in my head.
I'm sure that you can. What are we at? $250?
At $250 a pop, how many photo shoots would you have to do to gross $100,000? I think it's 400.
400. Yeah. It is, in fact, 400. Yeah. So divide that out over, say, 50 weeks.
But let's say that
That's 8 a week.
That's 8 family photo shoots a week. And okay, so that doesn't seem like a shocking amount. But if you have to shoot, process, sell, whatever, 5, 8, or 400 family photo shoots, and that's not including weekends, holidays, vacations,
right.
whatever
and,
you want.
And that's to make $35,000.
That's
a
to
year,
make 35,
or maybe $40,000 a year.
Yeah. I mean, if you put about let's say 8 to 10 hours of work into every photo shoot, that's including driving out to go shooting it, processing it, delivering it, getting whatever you get done, marketing for it, talking to the client, booking it. Let's say you spend 8 hours per photo shoot of manpower or of body power on human power on that work. then if you're doing 8 photo shoots a week, that means you're working 64 hours a week. So let's say, let's call it you're working 60 hours a week to make $35,000 a year.
And you're not saving any money.
And you're not saving any money.
Right. And let me say this. I mean, you said 250. And I'm telling you, if you're going for real volume, most of your real volume people, 250 is high.
This is why
when they call, when they're, oh, let's get a photo, family photo in the park, they're looking for somebody that's gonna be $99.
This is why, for the most part, all so these, now you're all looking, the volume, yeah, family portrait studios have closed down.
Yeah, so now you're looking at 900. You got to do 900 of these a year to make that kind of money at $100 a pop. Which is why, if you're going to make money as a portrait photographer, family portraits, you've got to be selling $1,000 a person, and that's now you're cutting a huge section of your market.
And you still
out.
Have to do 100 sessions a year.
Yes.
So that's two. So that's fine.
It's 2 a week.
That's 2 a week, and so that's not bad. So let's say that, you know, if you had a perfect business, you're doing 2 sessions a week. You're putting about, and if you're doing it making $1,000, it means you're giving them printed products. You're doing in-person sales, because you're not going to make $1,000 a family without doing some kind of meeting, consult, in-person, right, sales, something like that. Whether you're doing it on GoToMeeting,
got to be an
whatever
experience.
Yeah, you got to make it more of a high-end experience.
Right.
So you're going to be spending more probably than 8 to 10 hours producing a shoot. So, like, I think that it is really possible to make a great living in family portraits, but I think that it's you have to go boutique if you're going to go.
Family portraits are like when we were talking about the people that we know who do volume. Sports and schools, in that you can make a killer living at it, but we don't know a lot of people who do.
Right.
It's an outlier thing. A person who makes a lot of money in family portraits is a person who absolutely is 120% driven to do that.
Right.
And as a result, they market correctly, they shoot, they sell, they're all about sales. You look at guys like Greg Daniels, they are all
Branson.
About a concierge service, they are all about upsell, they are all about getting those clients who have money. They know where to go to get the clients who have money,
right,
and then once the clients get in the door, they know what to say and how to treat them in such a way that they feel comfortable spending the money,
right,
and that they want to spend the money. It's very much a sales-oriented tact.
Right.
You know, even more so, because a person who comes for a wedding, they need a wedding photographer, period. But a family portrait person, it's like selling a luxury car. You've got to convince them that they want a luxury car.
Right.
You know, you've got to upsell them into the luxury car.
Yeah, I think that that it's definitely an area of the business where the people who were doing the sort of middle volume where they, like, it's not, let's say they are making $800, $1,000 a session. Because the guys and gals and the photographers out there who are really crushing it in boutique family portraits are making $2,000-$3,000, $4,000 on a,
right,
session, and they're shooting like 100 of those a year or less. But like the people who do the middle of the road, the family, spending, let's say, between $500 and $1,500 on family portraits, I don't know anybody who just does family portraits that does that.
Right.
They're usually doing families and seniors and some weddings or other stuff, a little volume. So you're getting those people that are, it's part of their overall gross income. I think if you're going to be completely focused on family portraits, you have to go high end.
Yes.
Because it's shown over and over and over again, that high volume, low dollar is incredibly hard to sustain.
And I don't know anyone doing that who's young.
No.
They're all people who are older, and they've been at it for so long that they've managed to really dial it in.
Like, you can get more specialized as time goes on.
They've really learned how to do it.
But
all right.
If you ask any of those guys, they've done every kind of photography,
sure,
that you've ever heard of, and
yeah,
all shot volume, or they shot like for, you know, real estate magazines and on whatever, anything they could do. And as you get more successful and get your feet under you, you can specialize, and eventually you just have perfected kind of the one thing that you do.
All right, let's wrap this thing up. Don't forget, you can find us online. You can find Gary at HughesFioretti.com.
Oh, yes.
You can find me at BooRayPerry.com. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/PhotobombPodcast. You can find us also at our website, PhotobombPodcast.com.
And if you want to see Bure's high school senior portrait, visit us on the Facebook page, because he'll be looking
yeah,
and if you want to, if you want to make it look like he's looking at you, just step slightly to the left of your monitor.
Slightly to the left of the monitor. There was something over there very interesting, and I was looking at it when they took my picture. Anything else you need to add?
Yeah, I want to mention that we have a sponsor, XP Photo Gear, which makes the awesome, like, a dodecahedron thingy softbox that I use called the Speedbox 70. And they have offered to our listeners free shipping and a set of Speedlight gels if you use the code LIGHT at checkout. But that's only available at xpphotogear.com.
All right. We'll see you back here again next week.
Hey, man.
Hey.
Good job. See you later.